When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's In This League.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Come again?
With Scott Bogman and Chris Welch.
Can't wait.
What does that do? Does that blow your mind?
That just happened.
It is so good to welcome back our very dear friend, someone we have had on since like almost day one, one of the first crew of guests we've ever had on In This League now, you know, whatever, 8 years into it. He is Steve Gardner. You can find him on Twitter at Steve A. Gardner, senior fantasy editor over at USA Today. Has been doing this business for quite a while, is one of the best voices, just one of the best people to talk to, and Steve, it is so good for me to see you after what seems like forever. I feel like I haven't seen you since the world shut down.
Since COVID, yeah.
Scott's seen you a couple times, and it's just because of the weirdness and the missing.
Yeah, it's changed our lives considerably. And, you know, I miss coming out to Arizona and seeing the Fall League and all of the great spring training games that are going on out there. That's really been, I think, one of the biggest impacts that COVID has had and the whole pandemic is not being able to see games, see players live and be there at the ballpark. And we're just starting to get back into that now. And I hope we've seen the last of it, even though, I mean, we're still getting players testing positive and not being able to play and all that sort of stuff.
There's just one in basketball too. There's just one, I think of the Celtics game with Al Horford and questions like that. Yeah, right. You know, it's funny, Steve, I want to say, I could be wrong about this. It might have been our second ever interview, but we interviewed Steve at Surprise Stadium on mm-hmm. the concourse.
Yeah.
And I don't remember who it was, but someone hit a ball right up near us while we were recording. And I'm trying to, because I remember David Paulino, who was the Astros prospect, and God, I don't remember the other guy. It was two Astros prospects that were pitching. And then somebody hit this ball up while we were mid. And I remember we were up on the concourse, had the recorder, you know, right there right. on a table that in Surprise, they have these like standing tables and stuff. And I think
third base side.
Yep. I want to say that was like maybe our second interview because we had like talked with you once and then you were coming out and I was like, oh, let's do an in-stadium interview because I got really obsessive about doing that because Bogman and I had done an interview or we did a segment of a show in the left field of Surprise. While now Orioles DJ Stewart was a prospect and he was out there.
I mean,
there, like,
he could hear us.
He could hear us. He kept looking over at us.
We were doing a show for DJ Stewart.
Like, yeah.
He could hear us talk.
Well, because there was like no one in the stadium. And then actually the next year they stopped letting people like get on the grass. We just sat on the grass and he looked over at us one time and we were like, DJ, what's up? And we did that. So we got like really obsessive about doing that. But that was that was fun. That was one of our first two in stadium interviews we ever did.
Trivia question. I think I have this. Do you guys remember who got the walk-off hit that won that particular Futures game?
Oh, God.
I do.
I know who it is. Hold on. I know who it is. It's the Padres kid.
No.
Oh, you know, it is. It's the kid for the Padres, because I remember Sammy Reed was sitting next to me and he said, this dude is a zero share. I will have none of
this. Oh, that might have been a different year, though.
He had a walk-off hit.
I know what you're talking about, but I think it was Willie Calhoun.
Was it Willie Calhoun or was it
Willie hit a homer in it, because that was the first, that was the year I won Paul Stars. I won Paul Stars because I had Willie Calhoun. The only other person, there's only two other guys that jump to mind here. There's Cody Bellinger and Ryan McMahon. None
okay.
of them?
I think I remember the Padres guy. I think the Padres guy scored the winning run, and that was like Reed or something like that.
What yeah,
was,
maybe he tied it.
Buddy
yeah,
Reed,
yeah.
but no, that was late.
Buddy Reed. That's
but
was.
Buddy Reed that, wasn't that year. Buddy Reed was like
that
year
wasn't
two.
The year. Okay,
no, because
the hit was that I remember was Mabrys Veloria.
Oh, with the Royals.
Game winning hit.
Oh, was yeah. it really? Oh, okay.
That's what I remember. So it's funny how our minds play tricks. Yeah. On us, but I thought I remember him driving in Buddy Reed, and everybody's like, "Ah, it's over, you know." Come back, and
I remember was that the year that Vlad hit that screaming triple?
No, like, well, not no. That's not the same
shot.
Year.
That was a couple years.
You're
ago.
A year or two. You're a year or two later. Because that was 2018. This, I think, was 2017 when we did the interview.
We'll definitely have to dig back into that.
yeah, there's so many. But the Buddy Reed one is funny because Buddy Reed actually just got cut by the A's. But Buddy Reed, probably one of his biggest sports moments was in the championship game of that AFL, because that was the one where he hit the – God, what was it? He had a huge hit that I think – I don't remember if he won it or not. But no, he
I'm
won the game.
Sure he
no, this is what it was,
because it wasn't a bomb or anything. It was a walk off hit, because I'm telling you, Sammy was sitting right next to me, a Padres fan, and he said, "This guy is a zero share." And then he hits.
Well, that was in the Fall Star game, but that was in the Fall Star game. This is in the championship game. That was the one where the Braves kid Davidson, I'm forgetting, he hit a homer, and as he came around first base, or as he came around home, he blew his leg out. And they had to carry him off. And Buddy Reed, I think, had done. I have to go back and look at what it was, because I interviewed Buddy Reed after that. And I should have asked him about how Sammy said he was a zero. That would have been great. But Buddy was like, oh, my gosh, it was so crazy what happened with Davidson, because Davidson had literally walked the game off with a homer and then blew out his leg as he was rounding third base. And they dumped Kool-Aid on him. Whatever,
I remember
as they
that.
Were carrying
yeah,
him off.
Yeah.
I was on field while like half of that was going on. I actually still have the photos of it. But okay, but aside the point, we can easily get.
Boy, we have really gone off
down
into
down the
some
rabbit
deep
hole
tangent, yeah. haven't we?
Well, it just it happened. We have a long storied history, and it would be good to see you back in the Arizona Fall League and everybody there. We'd have to get Bogman back though too, Steve. Bogman's in Texas now.
Yeah, I moved to Texas. So
yeah, so
I went out for opening day. We saw the Seth Beer walk-off bomb at Chase Field. So I guess I do leave the house. I also went to a long...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Horns game and, you know.
You leave the house.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says...
In this league.
Hey, Farva, what's the name of that restaurant you like with all the mozzarella sticks?
in this league.
As a Nationals fan, do you want them to trade Juan Soto? Because look what they got back for Trey Turner last year.
How could one Nationals fan on the planet want them to trade Soto? Do people really sit and look and go, ooh, $400 million versus one of the best players in baseball? Do they care?
Well, especially when, you know, Bryce Harper was here and now he's somewhere else. Anthony Rendon was here. He was beloved. He's somewhere else. Max Scherzer is somewhere else. Trey Turner, you know, all of those guys that have come and, you know, helped
win a World Series.
A World Series in Washington, you know, that was just 3 years ago. And now none of those guys are here. Juan Soto still is. And I mean, I just look at somebody who could be one of those franchise generational players to when you look back over his career, if he stays in Washington, you know, the greatest National ever and could be, you know, way up on all of the, you know, career charts and everything like that, just be identified with this franchise. I would hate to lose that, especially as a fan. And to even think about what the return could be, as you guys said, you know, what have
Luke Weaver,
have
Carson
Nationals
Kelly,
gotten?
And Andy Young? That's right. Because that's what we got for Goldschmidt, right? And that's kind of the same. And Goldie never won a World Series. He helped the D-backs to the playoffs a couple times. But yeah, man, that is.
Have you actually heard any of these rumors? Because I've seen nonstop. I mean, the Twitter heads that go out and the insane mindless fans that do the thing where they're like, oh, you know, if we could get blah, 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 Anthony Volpe and Jason Dominguez, then we would trade one. People, they come up with the worst trades. They're the horrible fantasy type of guys, too. They come up with the worst trades being like, who says no? It's like everybody says no. Have you actually heard, since you're a little bit more dialed in that, have you ever heard of a truth to any thought that team would ever move Juan Soto?
No. And I think part of the not re-signing Anthony Rendon and all of the decisions that went into some of those payroll things, trading Scherzer, et cetera, had as like a ripple effect, it gives the Nationals the ability to actually pay what Juan Soto is worth. So, I mean, they did make the commitment to Steven Strasburg, but in terms of, you know, Soto means so much more to the franchise for such a longer period of time in the future that I think everything seems to be geared around, or at least that was the line that we were supposed to believe, that this was all a big plan for the future to make sure that Juan Soto stays in Washington as a member of the Nationals for, if not his entire career, for a long time.
I just roll my eyes.
If they trade Soto, they might as well be the Marlins, right? Like just a team that, you know, is pretty good and then sells off immediately to make the money back. And
well, we were talking
about that
before, just a tiny bit before, where there's that whole like rumor of the team selling or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah,
and
if
that's sitting out there, I think we had proposed the idea of like what's better, you know, financially, the team having a superstar, but a $400 million commitment, which literally is probably going to be the money. What's better, a $400 million commitment for a superstar player or a completely free financial book with potentially, you know, let's just assume. Yeah, let's assume they picked up like three or four prospects with a half decent system that they could, you know, restart, similar to the Rangers, actually, you know, where the Rangers kind of were depleted, get their new stadium, and then they unloaded the pocketbook. That would probably be the playbook in my mind of what the Nationals would do. Not the Marlins, because the Marlins continuously don't want to spend money. The Rangers playbook would be similar. You cut it to bare bones, then you spend out your butt to get a couple players, except in this case, why would you even do it without Soto? So, I mean, none of that plays.
It has to be dependent on what kind of ownership group comes in. Because if you're with like the Marlins, where you're going to be leveraged to the hilt to be able to, you know, actually pay for the franchise up front, you're not going to want those big contracts on the books. You're going to want to try and build with young players that don't cost a whole lot right now, but maybe down the line, once you've established your, you know, your cash flow and everything, you can afford those kinds of players. So right now, the learners are the kind of ownership that you want if you want to keep Juan Soto in a Nationals uniform forever. Somebody with deep pockets who has shown the ability to spend when it, you know, when push came to shove on some players. So I think, yeah, you're not finding a whole lot of those. Steve Cohen, you know, there's one Steve Cohen, and there aren't a whole lot of other Steve Cohens lining up to buy MLB franchises on their own and are also willing to spend for, you know, what it takes to compete, especially in, you know, that division.
It makes me think too, maybe my take on it is also kind of steep rooted in my kind of fantasy philosophy as well. I always get these questions, and Steve, I don't know, you know, where you sit on this type of stuff. I think it's impossible to trade Juan Soto in fantasy. He's one of those guys, and probably more specifically talking dynasty. Redraft too, it's still tough because nobody ever wants to pay out. But like these guys, all our listeners and to your listeners, to whoever, sleeping in the bus, they're always sending out these trades. And sure enough, there's always going to be one where it's like, is this enough for Soto? And it's like, no, it's never a good trade. They're not, because what it is it's quantity over quality. And what I kind of hate about it is the excuse I feel like that gets built in is so many people like, well, the size of the league, man, it's 20 man in a 20 man league. You just got to do. No, you don't. You are praying to God that one of these four players you acquire is 75% of what Juan Soto is. Juan Soto should recoup so much that the other team is literally having to second guess themselves. That's how I feel about those type of trades. So people, they'll put out these trades where it's like, look at this, what do you think? And I'm like, oh, that seems fair. Wouldn't do it. Fair doesn't work for me with guys like Juan Soto. So I guess I relate that into real life type of stuff. And the same thing in fantasy, you know, guys like Juan Soto, Ronald Acuna, Fernando Tatis Jr., give me a break about the shoulder injuries or this or that. Those are the absolute superstars. They're young. They're going to be here for 10, 15 years, and you're going to have continuous production. There really isn't a value unless you're getting like a star. I mean, do you kind of agree with me, or do you think there are scenarios? I mean, you play in plenty of different types of fantasy stuff. What are the scenarios where you move those type of stars, redraft or dynasty?
Yeah, I think certainly if your team is in a dynasty format, for instance, your team is scraping the bottom and has no hope of doing anything, you know, a player like Juan Soto may be your ticket to, you know, bypassing a couple years worth of painful rebuilding while you're holding on to him and he's not winning you anything.
You'd have to be the Nationals of your own league. Yeah.
Yeah,
where Soto's like,
but you know what the problem is with those type of trades? It's like, okay, to your point, there are guys I look at that would have been building blocks that people would have wanted. Anthony Volpe from last year, struggling. Brennan Davis, struggling mightily. Noelvi Marte, struggling mightily. Guess what people won't do? You won't see people move Julio Rodriguez and Bobby Witt for him. You won't see that move happen. And those are the type of moves that should be happening if you were ever to move those type of superstars. Mm-hmm.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, it's really hard. You hear so often when people are talking about trades, you know, get the best player in the trade.
Yeah.
You win the trade if you get the best player.
Yeah.
And Juan Soto is going to be the best player, you know, in pretty much any kind of scenario you cook up.
Yeah, I'm probably annoying to people at this point because I think people want confirmation to do things. And I'm much more of the, like, I'm not doing that type of person, because every trade, you don't usually need me for players like that. You don't need any analyst or any person to break down for players like Soto, because what should happen is you go, oh my God, I have to do this. Like, that's a trade that you do. The other trades, they probably don't do it.
Yeah. You need, if you're trading for Soto, you need like two lottery tickets and an all-star. That's what you need.
Yeah.
You need like a Julio Witt and a Chris Bryant. Like that's the deal that it has to be, because you're trading a top five player, and he's going to be a top five player for a long time. You know, that we're seeing no signs of Juan Soto slowing down at all. You know, Mother Nature's undefeated for sure, but you have to get, like, you know, what are the odds Julio and Witt are first round talents? They have the upside, but they're not there.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League.
No one asked you anything ever, so whomever's name is
In This League.
Why don't you take a letter opener and stick it in your skull?
Hey, yeah, so pretty much what I want to know with these guys, Steve, is they're struggling, you know, but they're in that range of they got to struggle for like another 6 weeks for you to drop them because they're high investment players. But are we worried that this is them, you know, falling off, that they are no longer going to be a top end player at the end of this season? So maybe you want to get out from under them. The first guy I have here is Ozzie Albies. You know, Albies just struggling a little bit. You know, it's not all coming together for him, and his Statcast page doesn't look fantastic. It's you know, it's pretty blue here. So what do you think on Ozzie Albies? You know, chase rate is bottom 2%. Barrel rate is in the 23rd. Hard hit rate is the bottom third. Is this Ozzie Albies hitting a wall and he's, you know, kind of trending down? Is this a bad stretch? Is this maybe an underlying injury? What do you think is going on with Ozzie Albies?
Yeah, I think sometimes with switch hitters, you end up them taking a little bit longer to get into the groove because, you know, if you're not working one side, then you have to fix two swings essentially if you're going badly. I think for him, he's still not striking out. That's the one thing, you know, if you're looking for the silver lining, strikeout rate is 16%, which is very good. And it's down from what he had been at the last couple of years. So, I mean, he's still making contact. We see he's not making great contact. The quality is not great, but I think that's something that comes. And so I'm not really worried about Albies. He's not going to lose his, not in danger of losing his job or anything like that. And really, you look at the Braves as a whole and they've struggled. So just imagine what happens if somebody starts getting hot in that lineup. And as we know, hitting can sometimes be contagious. So that's the way I look at Albies.
One I'm really curious about, this one, I saw Boggs beforehand. It's with somebody that I was so very not into, you know, coming into last year. And what they did on an underlining stat perspective, it quieted all of the concerns you would have, and the stats are through the roof. And we are back down to the concerns. And let's see how concerned you are. And I'm talking about Tyler O'Neill. Tyler O'Neill last year, you know, top almost 5% of exit velocity. He was in the top 10 percentile, if you will, of X slugging and WOBA and hard hit. He was all of that stuff. This year, he is right back down to those 2019-2020 ranges. Exit velocity way down. X slugging is 381, which is in line with 19 and 2020. If you're looking at like pitch mix stuff, he is not hitting anything outside of fastballs where he was last year. Off-speed pitches, which accounted for almost 10% of his pitches, so like, you know, change-ups and stuff like that, he was hitting like 300. Breaking balls, he was hitting around 240. He's under .135 on both of them right now, so, you know, whiffing a whole bunch more. He just doesn't look right. He doesn't look like the same player. Massive, massive trends down, and his Baseball's Amount page looks, you know, just pretty gross as well, and the results equal it. What's your take on Tyler O'Neill? Is this a slow, steady type of thing that is going to recoup, or do you think the last year might have been a little bit more mirage-ish, or how do you take it?
Yeah, I think we have to take a long, hard look at what he did last year because he wasn't really highly regarded coming into drafts in 2021. Hadn't really had a very impressive track record. I mean, there was that, everybody talked about the sprint speed and the, you know, the power that he did have when he made contact, but making contact has always been an issue for Tyler O'Neill. And now, you know, the one thing that jumps off the page at me is his home run to fly ball rate. I wonder if he might be one of those guys that is affected the most by this mushy baseball that we have this year. You know, humidors in St. Louis now, as it is with in all the ballparks. His home run to fly ball rate last year was 26.2%. This year, it's 6.1. And so, you just have to wonder if he might be one of those guys that gets hurt the worst by the change in the baseball. And I think the Cardinals have to be concerned, and fantasy managers have to be concerned as well.
What's the concern level of what you do with him? I mean, like, I was doing my updated kind of redraft ranks, and I gave him a good smackdown. I felt like you don't want to decimate a guy's value after a month, but you have to really start putting in some questions. I mean, we are getting to a point where the good thing is he's not like striking out a whole bunch more. The main way to take it is he's doing so much less with the hits that he makes now, like at an exponential rate, and he's making much worse decisions on his pitch recognition, which maybe is inside his head, which he's at the point where it's like, you can't be like that much worse than you're being right now. But what do you think that does for value? This was like an almost consensus top 50 player coming into the year. And
everyone loved O'Neill and hated Edmund, and Edmund's crushing it. And O'Neill sucks right now.
Yeah. So the question is kind of like, and I actually have a debate what we're going to be doing here shortly. Do you think Tyler O'Neill is even a top 150 player rest of season?
I don't think so. I have my doubts. And, you know, like I said, it's looking like last year might have been the fluke rather than the next step forward in the breakout. So it's troubling. All the signs are troubling. And if Juan Yepez is going to come in there and clobber the ball, somebody's got to sit. And it's really easy right now to say, well, Tyler O'Neill, you can be, you know, a late inning defensive replacement. That's an easy switch for the Cardinals.
And they got guys that are looming around too, like Lars Nootbaar in the minors, and Yepez can play one of those corner outfield spots, obviously, if they've got to be DHing Pujols and everything like that. So yeah, they've got so many guys in the lineup that they can't really screw around for too long. Luckily for them, Carlson's not lighting the world on fire as well. So if they want to stick with it, but you know, there's only so long. Almost makes them like Kelnick comparison with both of those guys, but the difference is you saw an insanely, insanely productive year from Tyler O'Neill, and it is interesting to think like the baseballs. You know, how much are the baseballs making that
mushy
effect?
Mushy is a perfect
mushy.
Word for
well,
it.
Humidor and every. Yeah. Remember we talked about this at the beginning of the year, how you've got humidors in every single ballpark right now, and what is the, you know, the effects of what a humidor does? What's going to happen to baseballs on the inverse in the summer? You know, when you start getting into different climates with humidors that don't really require it, are you going to see the ball flying more? So, you know, could there be a summer ahead for him? Yeah, and could there be a summer ahead for him? The only problem is he's also just making – he's not just only making bad contact. He's also making bad decisions. Like, he's making worse contact rates. Just when he hits the ball, nothing's happening with it. So, yeah, I'm kind of wishy-washy. I think he's still in that top 150 range, but – you get into June, how much longer can you really do this? And I think he's becoming a player that you've got to just sit on your bench and you've got to have hot hands. I mean, imagine 3 weeks ago having the decision to pick up Taylor Ward. And, you know, you're just like, oh, man, I don't have anybody to drop. And now you're looking at a situation like this. I think you would give a legitimate.
What makes people really hate a player, too, is when you had a shot to pick up Ward and then you don't. And you keep O'Neill, and now you're like, God, I hate
Who would you rather have, Ward or O'Neill rest of the season?
I think I'd take Ward.
Boggs?
Yeah, I mean, it's – that one's tough. I think I'm a little more hard-headed than you guys about that stuff, about dropping a player. I get a little more rigid, but, I mean, at this point, Ward is just tearing the cover off the ball, and O'Neill's doing nothing. So
if you drafted O'Neill – you're more than likely will stick with him. But if you could pick up one, you know, if you had a chance to acquire one of those from somebody,
for sure.
I think I would take, I would look to get Ward.
Yeah. That's an interesting thought too, of like, if you had the option between the two in a trade right now, who would you take? Who would you want to be the acquired player? And I wonder if the slide would go to Ward at this point. Cause what can you justify with Tyler O'Neill? I mean, his BABIP is relatively low. He's got a few counting stats on top, and it's only, you know, what, 20% of the season or something like that. There's still tons of season for him to turn around. He's just been so abysmal. So are there any other players on this list, Boggs? There's like one more wanted to hit?
Yeah, I have a couple others here. We can just go through these guys quickly, Steve. Matt Olson is he's not terrible. His stat cast page looks good, but his stats are just kind of middling. I think he ranks in the 200s. He's hitting around 250, so he's just okay. Teoscar Hernandez had the injury earlier, and now he's only hitting 182. He only has two homers. I picked him for 40, so it's making me look like an idiot. Randy Arozarena is hitting 230. He's got some swipes with six, but he's just not the normal guy that we're used to. We know he's streaky. And Key Brian Hayes, his stat cast page looks amazing. His Savant page looks awesome, but he has no homers. He's hitting 293. He's not driving in any runs because he's playing for the Pirates. So I guess the rest of these guys, are you worried about anyone for the rest of the season?
Name them off again. Run them down.
It was Matt Olson, Teoscar Hernandez, Key Brian Hayes, and the other guy.
Randy got walked bases loaded by Eduardo Rodriguez, a screw up a bet of mine today. So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Eduardo left with an injury, by the way, there. Good. So.
My level of concern goes from low to high on the way that the list came out. Hayes, I think, and Arozarena, probably mostly Hayes just because of the team concept. I have a good deal of Brian Reynolds shares too. And
yeah,
he's, you know, I felt like last year, especially, that it wasn't so bad to have Pirates at the top of the order because they were kind of productive in their own little subset. But now you can't even really get that anywhere along.
Because Vogelbach, you know, is hitting at the top of the order. You know, yeah. I mean, it's weird. It's weird.
And yeah. And the Pirates are really, really bad. So I think Hayes, although I like him as a player, I think in terms of getting production out of him, it is definitely.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League.
Buckle up, buckaroo. All night.
Let's do some player debates. I've got some here that I've actually also put on Twitter, so do not look because I will quiz you on the results. The first one is actually from the last episode. We were talking kind of about three or four different pitchers, and I settled on this, and I don't remember if this is the exact one that we had. Two very good pitchers this year having phenomenal years, Zach Gallen versus Nestor Cortez. Zach Gallen, 2-0, a 9K per 9, which is a little bit lower than his career, a 1 ERA, 1.05. As I've said, a very unsustainable, like 90% left on base and a 2% home run to fly ball ratio, but he's not walking dudes. He's striking out guys. He's got insane ERA, Zach Gallen does, versus Nestor Cortez, who I think stuff is less, but he is making the absolute freaking most of it, of the 2-1 record, 11K per 9, a 1.35 ERA. Gallen's got the worst xFIP of this group. Both unsustainable left on base percentage stuff, but Cortez just does it. He's a magician, multiple pitches that he commands. Gallen is kind of getting back to his old trick. So rest of season, Mr. Steve Gardner, Zach Gallen or Nestor Cortez?
I'm going to take Zach Gallen. I've been a fan of his from minor league days. And I think too, the difference is, and he was underrated in drafts this year because of the injury questions I think a lot of people had. I wasn't as concerned. And I think, too, the big factor is the Brent Strom factor that enters into this, to have, you know, maybe a different mindset or just looking at things in a different way can help a pitcher. And whether that's cause for or is related to him increasing his fastball velocity by a mile per hour over last year, or increasing the spin rate on the fastball by over 1,000 RPM from last year. Maybe it's that he's just more healthy. I don't know. But I think Zach Gallen is a guy, I think he can go deeper into games than Nestor Cortez can. And he has to, because the Yankees can just turn it over to that fantastic bullpen. I would come down on the Zach Gallen side.
It's tough because the team context comes into play. But I mean, I don't remember where you sat in the conversation. I feel like Gallen,
they're both
but,
great.
Yeah. But the team context, I felt like, was something that you and I were focusing on with Cortez versus Gallen and wins
for me,
being available.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be the team and Gallant's injury history that are going to lean me towards Nestor Cortez.
Interesting.
You know, and you know, both of these guys, like you look to see, oh, is one of these guys fooling us? You know, but no, Zach Gallen, his ERA right now is 105. His Sierra is 289. So his Sierra is still below three. Same deal over here with Nestor, 1.35 ERA, a 2.71 Sierra. So they're both overperforming. Like there's going to be, they're going to hit a bump at some point. Everybody knows that, but you know, watching
it's not
Gallen,
a Merrill Kelly kind of bump.
Yeah. Not an eight earned last night against the Dodgers there type of a bump for sure. But I mean, they're both good options. There's not really a wrong answer here, but for me, I am going to lean towards Nestor. Just the K upside is a little bit more. They're both not walking anyone. Nestor's walking a couple more. Like Steve said, he's probably not going to go as deep into the game, but his bullpen is going to save them. I don't trust Mark Melanson and Sean Poppin and all the rest of the losers in the D-backs bullpen because I watch them on a night-to-night basis. So how could I trust them? But so for me, that's going to be the defining factor. It's just, you know, the bullpen blowing some of Gallen's wins. We know it's going to happen. And, you know, just his injury history in total. So that's going to make me slightly more on Nestor here for the rest of the year.
Yeah, this is tough. I think a lot of things are in favor of Nestor, from CSW being 2% higher. Swinging strike percentage is about the same on these guys. Sierra is a little bit in favor of Nestor. But at the end of the day, I do think I got to go with Gallen. I think Gallen's stuff is better. The Diamondbacks have been putting some wins together, which has been surprising. And what I feel like I'm dealing with here, and this is just me at this point, like, what can I do here? Like, I don't fully believe that Nestor Cortez is this elite pitcher that he is right now. He's awesome. He's a great commanding painting pitcher, and he's using his arsenal to the fullest. But it's like, I don't feel like Gallen's using his to the fullest where Nestor is. I feel like they're both going to regress, but the regression is going to look different for Nestor. While I think Gallen will still be striking out guys, he still will go deep into games. And I don't think a ton supports it at this point. I think the support system, the support line for redraft right now, if you are just a person on paper, it's Nestor Cortez. Everything goes in line with him, from the K numbers to the, like I said, the CSW to the Sierra. But I think Gallen's stuff is better. I trust him to go deeper into games. I trust him to maintain his K rates, where I think it can be a little bit more volatile with Nestor Cortez. And probably some of that is track record and me being stubborn. But I'm going to go with Steve and go with Zach Gallen on this one. This is a tough one. What do you think the polling looks like? Bogman, I'll start with you. What do you think the polling looks like?
70-30 Gallen.
Oh, okay.
Gallen's always kind of been the guy. So
what about you, Steve? What do you think the polling looks like?
I think it's probably 60-40 Cortez.
Oh, well, there are a lot of Yankee fans, so that's a, you know, you're up there closer to Yankee country too.
I put it out before the show. It is 64% Zach Gallen right now, 35% Nestor Cortez. But what one person commented saying, brain says Gallen, heart screams Cortez. So that's a perfect way to say
it. That sums it up.
That really does sum it up. You're 100% right about that. Bugs, do you want me to present them, or do you want to just
go ahead?
So number three here is one that number two was one that we were just talking about with Tyler O'Neill. Now, we may kind of have your answer a little bit, because if you were taking Taylor Ward over him, this may give you the answer. But I put this one out there of Tyler O'Neill, thinking about track record and probably draft position coming into play here. Tyler O'Neill versus Christian Yelich. Christian Yelich going multiple years of underperforming. This year, starting to show signs of life, but he's still doing a lot of the same. He did hit for the cycle, 5 homers, 4 stolen bases, hitting .238. But I think the question you could put in is, this might be baseline Christian Yelich right now. Like this, from a performance standpoint, right, is there a lot of room forward? This might be baseline. Tyler O'Neill, clearly this is bottom barrel, but how much better can it improve? O'Neill, 2 homers, 3 stolen bases, a .195 batting average. Interestingly enough, they both have around the same BABIP and a relatively same career-ish. The problem is O'Neill is striking out at a higher rate. So rest of season, Tyler O'Neill or Christian Yelich? This is probably going to be relatively easy based on our conversation with you before, Steve.
Yeah, I'm taking Yelich. The playing time and the batting order position, the Brewers are not moving him out of that you know, the top of the order section. Hard hit rate is up for him. And I think the telling factors for me, at least, that has me optimistic on Yelich is walk rate for him and fly ball rate are both back at where they were in 2019 when he was the MVP. So we've seen some glimpses of that Christian Yelich already with, you know, the cycle and hitting a few home runs, to where it at least encourages me that he hasn't lost some of those skills that made him, you know, the best player in baseball just a few years ago. So I'm on the Yelich side.
Yeah, we talked about when we did the Are You a Savant game, Bogman, where Yelich was in there, and you know the page looks fantastic, and the underlining stats are really there, though there's a couple deficiencies. And it was so interesting to see, like, he was like, this was going into that, this has been like a week or so, but you know, going into that Thursday episode, it was like he was like top five, and I'm trying to remember what it was. It was like barrel percentage and this and that, a huge Savant page, and then it was like, but he's hitting sub 250. You know, who is this guy? So I'm encouraged by that. But again, I present to you, Boggs, I really do think the debate of this is this baseline Yelich versus bottom barrel Tyler O'Neill and what could come up for the future. And knowing, you know, you spent a top 50 pick on O'Neill, Yelich was probably around 100. What say you?
First of all, I'd like to say zero shares of either one of these guys.
Of either one.
I don't
okay.
have them, either one of these guys on any of my teams. So my answer really is nobody here. But with the way that, you know, Tyler O'Neill is playing right now, you have to take Yelich. Because like you said, there is room for improvement with Yelich for sure. I mean, his career BABIP is .349. He hasn't hit that since 2019, right? But he's .286 right now. So that's definitely coming up. It was at least .321 last year. So that is definitely coming up. Yelich is going to get better. My fear for Yelich is, of course, this back thing. Is it chronic? Is it going to, you know, get him out of the lineup? That's why I don't roster Yelich anywhere. O'Neill was just kind of going, I actually liked O'Neill going into this season, but O'Neill was just going in a place where I wasn't comfortable taking him as on other positions. So the fact that he's doing so bad now, there's no victory lap in there for me. I definitely would have drafted him, but I just didn't.
Yeah, I don't think I have a share. I don't think I have a share of O'Neill. I might have one, but I don't think I do. I have a couple shares of Yelich at this point.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, this is Yelich. I am still worried about his back and that creeping up again at some point this year. But the guy is playing much better than O'Neill now. And there's, you know, you can see room for improvement. You just don't see that with O'Neill right now. So I think it almost has to be Yelich.
Yeah, I'm with you. Right, I'm 100% with you guys. Like, 30% plus K rate guys are already a concern. And like, he defied some odds last year, but he just absolutely mashed the ball and made all the right decisions. He's not doing it this year, which is part of a problem. Yelich doesn't strike out. I think there's more to come. I don't know how much more. I do think we're getting near baseline, but hey, I'll take a 250 Yelich. That's going to be a 2020 guy. And that's what we look like we're in line for, where Tyler O'Neill, we really don't know. What do you guys think the poll looks like on this? What do you think, Steve? Yelich versus O'Neill on the Twitterverse?
I would think maybe 70-30 Yelich.
Boggs?
I think it's closer to 50-50, but I do think Yelich wins.
I'm going to round up. 79% Yelich.
Wow.
I know. I'm shocked, too. I'm actually shocked. It's one of the more lopsided ones that the turn has happened on O'Neill pretty hard right now, but that's the fun. You know, it's not necessarily recency, but you know, we are 6 weeks into the regular season, and a guy you took at the top 50 versus a guy that you probably begrudgingly took at 100. It is not even close.
O'Neill can be had for cheap.
That was the first thing that came to my mind is that now you won't have to pay hardly anything.
That's right.
Yeah.
Might be willing to get rid of O'Neill.
All right. Last one. This one, as fun as those were, this actually might be my favorite in where people would go with it. You hate this one? All right, good. Well, good. Then I know it's really
good.
Yeah. This one is one young bat versus one big, big productive season. And I think I've already teased one of the guys. Taylor Ward is going to be on this list, who's hit 9 homers, hitting .376, a not sustainable .439 BABIP, just pointing out. But very good walk and strikeout numbers. He's been phenomenal. He'll come back down to earth, but you always have to ask yourself, what does that look like? Like, everything else is really, really good. Versus the uber prospect Julio Rodriguez, who is hitting .265, two homers. I haven't looked, but I think still leads baseball in stolen bases. Does have a 30% K rate, which you don't want. A BABIP a tiny bit high, but either way, Julio Rodriguez, while struggling, has made himself elite in a stolen base marker, which we never would have thought, and is now starting to pick up, had a four-hit game, starting to pick it up a little bit. So the .265 stolen base monster Julio Rodriguez prospect versus the pop-up power-hitting Taylor Ward for the year. Steve, what say you?
I'm a Julio Rodriguez fan, and I think one of the things you guys, I'm sure, saw it. Maybe you talked about it already on the podcast. Of all those called strikes that Julio Rodriguez was getting earlier in the season, and striking out on balls 6 inches outside the strike zone, I think that just shows. And he hasn't really changed his approach, and now things are coming together for him.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
In this league.
I thought we were going to be just friends.
What? Friends listen to
In This League.
In the dark.
Oh, yes, my endless love is in this league. And you guys, I haven't heard this for quite some time. I'm not on hour three. I'm never doing hour three here. So the OG song, shout out to, Pavona. Shout out to Pavona.
That's right, Chris Pavona.
Put that together there. I got to get some new rejoins going here. But this is a classic. This is an OG one that has been actually dedicated to just the radio. We've never played it on the podcast side. It's a radio joint only. We also, to add to this, we got brutal news. Wednesday night, Max Scherzer took himself out in the sixth inning. Didn't look great. Then there was some rumors Thursday that there was going to be some positive news, that it didn't look as bad. We find out that it's a high to severe oblique strain, and Max Scherzer is going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. Woof. Dude,
I'm watching that while it happens, and I have like my multi-screen up where I can see all the games, but I'm listening to a podcast in the background, and I see Scherzer throw a pitch and then look over to the dugout and do this, you know, the hand underneath the neck, like I need to be out. And I was like, if Scherzer's doing that stuff, I was like, in Home Alone, if Uncle Frank says no, then it must be pretty bad. If Scherzer is taking himself out, it must be pretty bad. So
yeah, I mean, Max won't let anybody come up on the mound.
No, he's the one that you can clearly see. He curses more on the mound. Like, he's the guy that curses the most since Greg Maddux did. You know,
my
like,
favorite there, was
that
when
whole
he,
story of Greg Maddux, like his mom called him and said, "You need to stop cursing. I can read your lips on TV." Yeah, yeah.
My favorite was how Max got mad at Dave Roberts for like patting him on the butt or whatever. He's like, "Don't touch me," like that type of thing. Like Max is just he's built differently, and that's brutal. What's crazy about it is the Mets, theoretically, if they can get through this, which I don't know if they can, you're going to get Max and probably DeGrom coming back around the same time. Like that's like a trade deadline type of thing. So they need to figure a way to get through it. And I don't necessarily think they've got the pieces to be able to do this. I mean, Tyler has been good, McGill for the, you know, for the Mets early on in the season, but this might be the type of thing that this team needs to go make a move, because the problem is you don't want to get too far behind because you have Max and DeGrom coming back. So just something I'd throw out there is maybe the Mets will be one of the teams that jump into the fray. Maybe they talk to the A's. Frankie Montas has been sitting out there. This would be the perfect move
for the
Mets to jump in on. And we will have to see, and we will be talking about it in the upcoming episodes right here and at In This League on the In This League Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Friends, thank you so much for tuning in. As always, have a fantastic weekend, and we'll talk to you next week right here on ITL. Peace. Bye.